Hi, it's Ariana.
Hi, it's Greg.
As a listener to Climate One, we know you care about how climate disruption is affecting all of us, now and into the future. I'm guessing you already do several things in the spirit of climate action. Here's another one. Giving a donation to us to continue bringing you shows about the causes and solutions to the climate crisis. You can do that at climateone.org/donate.
We offer all our podcasts and radio shows for free, but it takes time, effort, and resources to produce new episodes every week. When you give, you help us pay for the talented staff, equipment, and materials we need to make the show. And you'll join a group of other dedicated funders and community supporters who keep Climate One on the air.
If you're inspired by the guests and conversations we curate, please consider making a gift today at climateone.org/donate. Thank you for your support. And thanks for listening. This is Climate One. I'm Ariana Brocious. This week, Climate One is hosting a slate of events as part of SF Climate Week. We've got a series of live programs at the Commonwealth Club featuring California and San Francisco Bay Area leading voices in policy, climate justice, and business. Today, we're releasing an excerpt of one of these conversations for you, our podcast listeners. You'll hear more of these interviews in our regular episodes in the coming weeks. And if you're in the Bay Area, come join us in person. Check out climateone.org for a list of all of our programming during SF Climate Week. And now, let's hear some of the conversation between Climate One co-host Greg Dalton and California Attorney General Rob Bonta. This was a live conversation taped at the Commonwealth Club World Affairs as part of Climate One's SF Climate Week programming.
You filed a civil lawsuit that alleges ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, BP, and importantly, the American Petroleum Institute have known since the 1960s, I actually think there's evidence they knew in the 50s, that burning fossil fuels could warm the planet. Then instead of alerting the public, they chose to downplay or outright deny the effects. Can you give us an overview of the suit and what it alleges?
Absolutely, and wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me. The short of it is that these fossil fuel companies and the API, the American Petroleum Institute, they knew about global warming and predicted with terrifying accuracy where we would be today with extreme weather and global warming and climate change, and they lied about it. It was bad for business. They knew internally, they acknowledged internally with memos and conversations the truth of climate change, but externally to the public, to the world, they lied and they denied climate change, and they didn't just fail to talk about it. They had a very sophisticated strategic public relations approach to how they denied it. They hired a firm and they created front groups and they placed and planted op-eds, all saying the opposite of what they internally acknowledged. And so this is a climate change deception case. We have filed it in San Francisco Superior Court. We are the biggest geographic entity and biggest economy to sue these fossil fuel companies for this conduct. We think it's a game changer. We think it's a massive transformational moment in terms of accountability. And we believe in a simple premise. One, you shouldn't lie to the people of this state, of this country, of this world. And two, you should be held accountable and pay for the damage that you created because of that deception and because of those lies. So a cornerstone of our case is our public nuisance claim, which has a remedy of an abatement fund, a fund to pay for mitigation and abatement to address climate change repercussions that have harmed so many of us. Of course, now we know we're seeing droughts and floods and wildfires and superstorms, and homes are being washed away or burned, and farms are being impacted, our infrastructure, our roads.
Can I just jump in there, though? You know, public nuisance sounds like, you know, noisy neighbors next door and dog poo on the sidewalk. It doesn't sound like a serious thing. You know, so what is it about nuisance as a legal term? Because nuisance sounds like, you're a pain, but, you know, it's not a big deal.
It's very serious, and it's been applied in major actions like this in the past. So it is essentially a harm to a community or a neighborhood that's been created by a single entity. that is exactly what's happening here with fossil fuel companies creating harm to all of Californians and beyond. And it's not an unprecedented novel approach. It's been used with tobacco. It's been used with opioids. It's been used with lead paint. Other entities, big corporate entities that have harmed people with a product that they knew was harming them and continue to perpetuate it and push it out into the marketplace anyway. So it's a tried and true approach. And the abatement fund could be seeded with billions of dollars from the fossil fuel industry.
Okay, and we'll get into that later. So it's nuisance is more serious, in a legal term than it means to kind of the average person. There's also fraudulent, you're claiming business practices, damage to natural resources, and product liability. So this seems like you're actually throwing a lot of different things to see what sticks.
That's it. There's four buckets of legal claims. There's the public nuisance claim. There's a series of claims around fraud and deception and false advertising. There's a failure to warn products liability bucket of claims. And then the fourth is a special cause of action that is unique only to the Attorney General of the state of California to be able to protect our natural resources when they're harmed by an entity. So four buckets, the most broad sweeping set of claims ever in this space, again, brought by the largest geographic entity and economy. Our complaint's very thorough, over 135 pages. There's a set of 15 to 20 pages, which lay out in excruciating detail that will make your blood boil. The facts dating back from the 50s, 60s about what the fossil fuel companies that are defense in the case, what they knew when they knew it, how they acknowledged it, citations and quotes to internal memos, to internal discussions, and then what they did instead to lie to the people to bypass clean energy pathways and opportunities for carbon capture and development of other technologies in pursuit of billions of dollars in profits. And their business model has been very successful. They have captured billions of dollars in profits while socializing the costs to the people of California, America, and the world.
And we've seen this before, a lot of this follows on the tobacco playbook with, delay, deny, et cetera, or they go from deny to delay to deflect. There's lots of D words that come up here. And then in 1998, Big Tobacco agreed to a grand bargain and pay more than $200 billion over 25 years. It's known as a master settlement. Complicated, but there's similarities, lots of states, and then they eventually rolls up into one big settlement. This happens in asbestos and other things.
Yep.
So how relevant is the tobacco precedent for what you're trying to do on oil?
Very relevant. And we can't talk about our lawsuit without talking about tobacco, without talking about opioids, without talking about lead paint. And the similarities with tobacco are striking. The use of front groups, the use of strategic public relations.
Some of the very same lawyers.
The same ones. It's the same playbook. It's an off-the-shelf playbook used by corporations when they know about a fact that is very problematic to their business model, that they know that they're hurting people. And if people knew that, they would make different decisions. So they set about to lie. Merchants of doubt, undermining the science and providing studies that they commission and op-eds that they place in key newspapers to suggest an alternative reality than the truth that they acknowledge.
Yeah, influencing elite universities with research funding, yeah.
By paying for the funding. So paying for their own studies. They don't like the actual facts, they pay for alternative facts. And it's wrong. And the pathway that tobacco took where multiple entities worked together, teamed up, applied aggregated pressure over time and across geographic spaces. We're in the middle of that process now, I believe. Our entry, I think, opens up the floodgates for others to join. And if other states who are invited to join and other entities who are invited to join add their voice, then I think we get into the same place as we were with tobacco.
But there's a big difference between tobacco and oil is that a lot of people never smoked. Right. And everybody uses fossil fuels. I've owned an electric car for more than a decade. I still use fossil fuels. I still fly, so tobacco and oil are different in terms of, the economy runs on oil in a way that it never ran on tobacco. And we're complicit. You and I are both complicit. So how do you get to that?
I mean, it's not about who's using fossil fuels. Like you said, it's universal. It's ubiquitous. And that's part of the lie here is to tell people it's okay to use fossil fuel because climate change is not real. It's not really happening. Or it's not happening as quickly, or it's not as urgent. Or we are now, today's greenwashing lies. A fossil fuel is actually clean energy. Natural gas is clean energy. Or we're in the middle of a massive transformation into clean energy futures when only, you know, 1% or less of their investments are actually in clean energy, and 99% remains with fossil fuels. So, you know, we are the state of California suing. California is a fossil fuel producing state. We're the home of Chevron. And both things can be true at once, that you can hold fossil fuel companies accountable for their conduct, for their lies, for the damage that they visited on the people of the state and this nation, and acknowledge the truth that got us here, which is that, you know, fossil fuels are ubiquitously used.
There's a difference also in the mechanism of harm. When I smoke a cigarette, smoke goes into my lungs, it causes cancer, right? We burn fossil fuels, it goes up in the sky, something happens, it comes down, and suddenly the San Mateo coast is eroding, and you know, we have droughts, and so it's a little harder to, how do you know that this company or this refinery caused this flood or this damage, therefore to assign damage in a court case?
Yeah, you know, that'll be part of what we have experts to talk about, you know, the depth and the exact scope of the damage, the causation that exists. There is no doubting climate science and climate change, although the whole business model of the fossil fuel companies has been to doubt it. If you believe in facts, evidence, science, and data, you can't doubt it. And so that will be a part of the discussion, how much each entity pays into the abatement fund, how much Chevron is responsible, and how much, you know, Shell is responsible. I'm happy to have them pointing the finger at one another to talk about who's more responsible than the other. But the damage in aggregate will be clear, the impact on Californians. You know, we have data that shows the impacts of wildfires, the impacts of floods, the impacts of superstorms. It is knowable. And so we will present that to a court and make our case.
You're listening to a special SF Climate Week conversation between Greg Dalton and California Attorney General Rob Bonta. We'll have more after this quick break.
Hey everyone, I'm Dan Kortler, the host of TED Climate. Each episode, we unpack the problems and solutions of climate change. This season of the show, we're getting into some big ideas that make us optimistic about the future, like meat grown from cells and leather made from mushrooms. And the best part? We look at how building a greener future can be an upgrade instead of a sacrifice. Find and follow TED Climate wherever you're listening to this.
Ben Santer is a climate scientist formerly at Livermore National Lab who kind of pioneered in fingerprinting. And he says that you know, climate science in courts is kind of like where DNA evidence was 25 or 30 years ago. It was this complex science. People didn't know how to use it in courts. And now DNA evidence is kind of common and used all sorts of ways, right, to get people convicted or let out. And he says climate science will be like DNA science and used in courts. So tell me a little bit about this, you know, this fund, you know, You just mentioned sort of you're going to sign, you know, who pays into it. Where does it go? And who decides where the money goes? Because that's often a big issue is like, okay, got a big pot of money, you know, in smokers, it's pretty clear, like it's gone toward education, stop kids from smoking. Where would you direct the fund if you were successful?
You know, this is something that will be the product of discussions at the time that we secure the abatement fund, which is not today. It'll be a couple years down the road.
Might be decades, some people say.
We don't think so. we think 3 to 5 years. We want to move expeditiously. We entered this case now because the pathway to a substantive ruling, to actual judgment day instead of procedural hurdles, is within reach. For the last 5 years, there's been a debate about whether these cases should be brought in federal court or state court. The decision has been made in the Ninth Circuit in the Western region.
And the U.S. Supreme Court has kind of cited and also not, you know, said, yeah, keep it in state, which the oil companies wanted in the federal.
That's correct. They did not take the appeal from the oil companies to the U.S. Supreme Court. In doing so, assured that we could move forward in state court. So the abatement fund will be used based on the need to address all of the variety of harms of climate change, to abate and mitigate. It could be things like cooling centers and clean air centers, forest management, seawalls could be possible, water storage to address drought. Any of the challenges from, you know, drought to wildfires to floods to superstorms that have a mitigation, those are potential areas for investment.
And you've worked on environmental justice. You know, what about communities that have been most harmed? Because we have 5 refineries here in the East Bay. They're concentrated in a certain area. You know, it is downwind from Pacific Heights and Marin. You know, it is in certain communities. What about those communities that have been frontline and harmed most by fossil fuels?
Absolutely. The communities that are hurt first and worst, that are under-resourced and overburdened that live at the intersection of poverty and pollution are top priority for relief and for support. It's an appropriate allocation of resources to help those harmed the most and who have the least ability to respond and provide them substantial resources up front.
By one count, there are more than 30 cases against oil companies filed by states, cities, jurisdictions, and tribal nations. As you said, there's been a lot of procedural, try to slow it down. Massachusetts and the city of Honolulu have moved past a lot of those motions and they're for dismissal and reached pre-trial discovery phase. Now, this is where things get interesting because this is when boxes of documents start to show up and emails get revealed. So what are you looking for in discovery? Because these are the sort of, you know, when the so-called smoking guns come out and things get really interesting.
Yeah, it's exciting. And that there's 30, I think you'll see double, triple, quadruple that in terms of entities that sue as they learn more about the case and they see the momentum that we're building and they see that you can get to the substance and hold accountable these fossil fuel companies. I'll say first that when we sue, we feel we will win in court at the time of suit. That we've done our due diligence, we've done our investigation, we've developed the factual case and bases for our claims, and we feel, you know, we could go to trial very soon, that we don't need discovery to prevail. Discovery is another way to build on our causes of action, maybe identify other causes of action and amend the complaint, to add belt and suspenders to the facts that we already have. So, you know, we're looking for more smoking guns. And I say more deliberately. We have smoking guns. We have those memos that show that in the 50s and 60s, these fossil fuel companies are acknowledging the future of climate change and extreme weather and global warming. They knew then where we would be today, and they said it, and we have documents that prove it. So are there more documents? Is there additional indication of that theme of knowing about climate change and lying? Surely there's more, and we expect to find some of those documents in discovery, and what becomes available in other cases, you know, to the extent it's not confidential and it's public, becomes evidence in other cases.
So how much of this, your suit, is affected by the other cases going on? There's one, you know, Held versus Montana, which that's very specific because the Montana state constitution, because of some reforms in the 70s, says there's actually a right to clean environment in Montana that we don't have in California. Some people are trying to get that in the California constitution. There's Juliana, which is, the public trust doctrine, trying to take something from water and apply it to air. And that's been in the Biden administration, by the way, is fighting that, just as the Trump administration and Obama administration did. So how much is this affected by an ecosystem, or is it just kind of each case and each state is very narrow and separate from the others?
It's part of an ecosystem. It's part of an ecosystem of litigation that has impact litigation. Some of the biggest changes in our society have occurred through litigation. You know, see, for example, Brown versus Board of Education. This is a place where change can occur, based on existing law and violations of that law and the remedies that ensue as a result of the lawsuit. So, you know, Montana, with a special Montana constitutional provision, a case should be brought in Montana under that constitutional provision. It's not available in California. It can only be brought in Montana. You should do it.
And it was upheld by a conservative state court. It was upheld by a conservative state Supreme Court in Montana.
Yes. And so, you know, we should bring justified claims that are supported by the facts, claims that have a strong legal basis. But the courts are a place for holding folks accountable, like fossil fuel companies, when they skirt accountability and force people to pay while they're taking billions of dollars to the bank and they're lying to the people and violating the law in the process. So I think more is more is better. I think any claim that is based on sound law and good facts that can hold the fossil fuel companies available are part of a broader ecosystem of impact litigation.
You've been listening to a special SF Climate Week conversation between Greg Dalton and California Attorney General Rob Bonta. You can find all of our Climate Week programming at climateone.org and stay tuned to our pod feed for more episodes in the coming days. I'm Ariana Brocious. Thanks for listening.